Hello. We are human beings and our official name is human being. Today on Radio Gorgeous, I'm excited to have on a guest who is here to help us find the being part of ourselves. She believes that finding our being can and will lead to a calmness, happiness and spirituality. She is Jackie McDonald. Jackie is a mindfulness mentor and conscious leadership advisor, and this is her first book, The Lost Art of Being, Secrets to a Calm, Happy and Easy Life. Hi, welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Jackie.
Thank you, Josephine. Thank you so much for inviting me here.
So what do you want to do with us first?
Well, I think it would be really lovely if for you and I and whoever is listening as well, just become very present with where they are for the next however long they're listening to the podcast for. Obviously not if you're driving, but if you're somewhere comfortable at home, you can just take a few moments. And this is such a lovely thing to do to prepare if you have a difficult conversation to have, or even if you have something fun that you're looking forward to, and you just want to make sure that you're fully present in the moment, and it doesn't take long at all. So if you're sitting comfortably, or even you can do this if you're standing up, and if you're happy to do so, just closing your eyes for a few moments and bringing all of your attention into the body, and specifically into the feet, and just notice what's happening in your feet at the moment, which might be quite a strange thing to do, but it's a really good trick for getting the brain to focus on the body. So you just start to explore whatever feelings might be in the feet. And then you can bring the awareness up through the body, up through the legs, through the hips, through the trunk of your body, tops of the shoulders, down the arms, into the fingertips, and bring your awareness into your face now as well. And just notice if there's any tension. We carry a lot of tension in the face, so you can just take a moment to explore any muscles around the mouth or around the eyes and just see if there's scope to just let go a little bit and just invite your whole body to relax just for a few moments. And then you can bring your attention to the breath. Notice how the breath is in this moment. The breath is incredibly powerful for calming down the central nervous system. So you can lengthen the breath with a very easy breathing technique, which is in for 4 and out for 6. And go at a pace that suits you, but try and lengthen it as much as you possibly can without it being a strain. And just a few rounds will send a message to the central nervous system and importantly to the mind, that you're safe, that you can relax, and that you can become fully present in this moment. And then you simply start to notice what presence feels like, what stillness feels like. So just sitting here in this moment, getting a sense for the nowness of this moment. And just see if you can imbue that nowness with an attitude of caring and kindness and even love. And then just think about your intention for the next few moments. So for the next 10 minutes or so, what do you want out of this time? Is it just to be more present? Is it to learn something? Is it to be inspired? Or is it simply just to be? If you allow that intention to infuse within every cell of your body and seal it in, return your attention to the breath and back to the body, and then whenever you're ready, opening your eyes.
Gosh, lovely, really lovely. Thank you so much. I hope everybody, if you're traveling, it's a really good thing to have done. I'm feeling quite dreamy now, actually. So your book, The Lost Art of Being, it all sounds too good to be true. How can something which sounds so simple bring such profound results?
It sounds too good to be true because it goes against everything that we're taught in our culture. You and I were probably brought up to believe that we had to work really hard to get anywhere, to get what we wanted, that we had to strive towards getting the best grades that we could at school and getting into a university or really making something of our lives. And that's what we have, most of us, being conditioned to do. And what's really interesting is that actually there's science now, there's a lot of studies being done on this that proves that this paradigm, if you like, of chasing success, and the reason that we're chasing success is ultimately because we want to be happy, and that this is a completely false equation. And actually, if you switch that equation and you focus on happiness, then the science is starting to show that a successful outcome is more likely. So the book is really about really questioning everything that we've been taught and everything that society is constantly reaffirming to us about how we have to be constantly on the move and pushing and driving and striving in order to be our best selves. Actually, if you flip that around and you prioritize feeling good, feeling fantastic, that actually that's when miracles can occur.
Again, it sounds absolutely amazing. So what is the difference? Because this is a kind of crux of the matter. What's the difference? You say human and being are two separate parts of ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. So this is really interesting. We all refer to ourselves as human being, but in actual fact, most of us only really honour the human aspects of ourselves, which is the physical form. So this is the 46-year-old woman with big hair who's sitting in front of you today. And we really value that physical form and all the identity that comes with it. So all the thought forms, everything that I believe about myself, everything that's happened to me in the past, my identity, the roles that I play as a mother, as a writer, as a businesswoman, they all make up my human identity.
Jackie McDonald, yeah.
Yes. Mm. And most people are really only aware of that aspect of themselves. What I discovered through Grace was there's a whole other side to me that's non-physical. So this is like just the beingness of myself, just the presence, because everything that's here in physical is ultimately it's a thought construct. It's something that I'm believing about myself. But actually, if you strip that back, and if we take away, if we allow ourselves just for a few moments to let go of all the thoughts that we have about ourselves and who we think we are, and if we let that go, we find such a spaciousness. And not just a spaciousness, but this incredible connection to all of life, all the universe, whatever you want to call it, all of creation. And then you're suddenly like, oh my goodness, this is who I am. And that becomes wonderful because then you suddenly realize how powerful you are and how really your only limitations in life come into play because of your own thoughts and your own beliefs. If you can drop those, feel into a greater power, feel into your beingness, then you become limitless.
And is this a kind of religious teaching? What is this spirituality? Is this Buddhism? Is it the great secret of mankind? What is it?
Well, there's been clues about this for thousands of years. So it's all of those things. It's philosophy. It's part spirituality. It's part science as well. It's part art and literature and many of these things point to the same truth. But if you go back to ancient Greece, for example, written in the temple of Apollo, there's an inscription that says, know thyself, know thyself. And so the clues were there, and that's just not necessarily a religious or a spiritual teaching. It's more of a philosophical teaching that says, really, get to know who you are as a human being and discover the greater part of you, what I call the being aspect of yourself, and you will have such balance and beauty in your life. Life will just take on a whole new shape.
Is it your soul that you're getting in touch with, would you say?
Yeah, yes, you could call it your soul, your spirit, your higher self, your higher power. There's lots of different names for it.
And everyone's got it, because I was thinking, when we're born, what's that? Because we haven't got the personality yet. Okay, we've got traits in our genetically, but then, and also when we die, then that, so that is the, it's, that is the essence of us, isn't it? It's this energy we're born with.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
All, everybody's got it. The trees got it, the flowers got it, the soil's got it.
You're absolutely right, Josephine. Yeah. Everything on this planet, I mean, even things that you think are fairly innate. So yes, of course, trees, you look at trees, and this is why nature, and again, it's been proven by science so many times that being out in nature, having a walk in the woods, or even just spending some time outside with nature, it's a very powerful well-being boost, more powerful than some of the drugs. And I think that's because on a subconscious level, probably it reconnects us to something that's essentially there. But it's the essence of everything. And what a really nice exercise that you can do to kind of really start to feel into this and tap into this. If you think of one of your earliest memories, so maybe when you're, 3 years old, 5 years old, something like that. And if you go back to that time, now your body would have been completely different, completely, and from a science level, completely different from the body that you're in today.
Oh yes, because it keeps every 7 years, your whole bone structure, everything changes.
Yeah, the cells are constantly changing, so it would have been a completely different body. Your thoughts would have been very different at that time, your belief systems, your personality to some extent. But think about that time as a 3-year-old, 4-year-old child, what it felt like to be you. And you knew what it felt like to be you and to exist and to be present. And you know what that's like. And then fast forward to when you're a very old lady, when you're 99 years old, and imagine yourself just in that moment. And again, your body will be completely different and your thoughts and your beliefs may be different. But there'll still be a presence of you. There'll still be an essence of you. And it's that that we're talking about. And the beauty of realizing that is you understand that although your body is born and your body dies, the essence never does. So with that comes a fearlessness that actually this physical side of me is just one aspect to me, but there's something far greater, far more magical, far more beautiful that can never, ever go away.
Okay, so you, in the book, you know, it goes on about, you know, finding the truth and putting your personality aside. Can you tell me, Jackie, what has happened to you and what moments have you gone through and how, what does it feel like? Because I just tell you, but yesterday I had a difficult day. I didn't think I ate enough, and I kind of I was just rushing around, and my emotions were really I was really anxious all day. So I was thinking, right, I'm reading Jackie's book, and I'm going to just try and become, I'm just going to, because you say kind of stand back and look at your feelings. But whenever I stood back and look at my feelings, it made me feel really panicky.
Right.
Why would I, you know what I mean? Whereas I thought it would make me feel calm, but it didn't. It was like my body didn't like, my mind didn't like me doing that.
Yes, okay. And did you try any breathing techniques? Have you got any other tools that you can call on when you're feeling like that?
Well, yeah, in the end, I just say to myself always, this will pass, this will pass. And then something happens and there's a bit of a breakthrough and I feel more relaxed. But, you know, at the actual moment, I was just trying to do the technique of sort of, you say, try and be empty, but it just, you know, it was great resistance.
Yes. So sometimes what happens is, and I think it's really interesting that you said, I didn't eat enough, I was hungry. And actually, the way that we look after our physical bodies has a huge impact on how we are able to feel into and perceive our greater self. So I had an experience this morning, for example. I woke up, went downstairs to get some breakfast. I noticed that I was a little bit out of sorts. I didn't feel great. I was snappy with the kids. And that's the moment that I think, and I was thinking about how much I had to do today. I had to do lots of things before coming here, and there was a big list of things that I wanted to get done and wanted to get right. And I was feeling quite tetchy about that. And then suddenly I noticed that. I noticed that I was all human and no being. I was out of balance. And I also remembered that I'd had a couple of glasses of wine with my girlfriend the night before. And things like that, I mean, it's not the case for everyone, but for me, if I have too much alcohol, too much sugar, too much caffeine.
Not enough to eat.
Not enough carbs. Because what happens is, this has an impact on the central nervous system. And this is really interesting and where it tips into neuroscience. If you haven't had enough to eat, then your body is essentially in fight, flight mode.
Well, that's what it felt like.
Yeah. So then what happens is the amygdala, which is the part of the brain whose job it is to constantly be paranoid and on the lookout for stress. So it is super vigilant when you're in that state, which is why you found it very difficult to calm that down and to literally swap into a different part of your brain, into the prefrontal cortex, which is where your logical, calm, rational thinking comes from. And maybe from that place, you would have found it a little bit more easy to let go of thoughts. However, when we're in that state and when the amygdala is on full alert, it's really, really difficult to switch into that different place of thinking. So we're thinking very much from a perspective of fear, because that's the job of the human, you know, we're here, we're physical, and we have to stay physically alive.
In fact, a very interesting line in the book, you say that the brain is all about survival.
Yeah, absolutely. So recognizing that and noticing that and noticing when we get caught up, and that's my breathing techniques. I always think it's
so
really
what did
boring.
You do this morning to calm yourself down?
So do you know what I did? I went back to bed. I took a cup of tea to bed. Because
Jackie, this sounds perfect.
Because I noticed that all of the things that I thought that I had to do...
They weren't that important. Yeah.
Things that are really important, they will get done.
Yeah.
And I just thought, the thing that is most important in this moment is that I come back to my centre, that I feel good, I feel happy.
So did you have a little snooze or did you do a relaxation technique?
I switched on my kind of go-to place if I need to connect back in is YouTube. And I talk about this in the book as well. There's so many amazing spiritual teachers in YouTube, and not even spiritual teachers, just, you know, philosophical teachers or teachers with some really great advice.
Tell us some names.
So Eckhart Tolle is absolutely brilliant, The Power of Now. And he's very accessible, you know, because he's not too out there. My particular favourite is a guy called Muji, but he
is... How do you spell that?
M-O-O-J-I. Mm-hmm. So if you just go onto YouTube and look for him, and his teachings are amazing, although for some people, they're a little bit out there. He comes from an Indian lineage, and he's sort of quite into the robes and the rituals and things like that, which I quite like and you probably quite like, but it's not everyone's cup of tea. But there are so many.
So what did you listen to? You've got to tell us, Jackie.
I can't, do you know what? In those moments, I trust the universe. So I literally go into YouTube, and what I love about YouTube is when it gets to know what you like and the teachers that you like, it just, you know, it brings up.
Autoplay.
Exactly. So I go there and I'm like, right, what have you got for me? What do I need in this moment? So I literally sat for, I don't know, half an hour. I drank my tea. I listened to Muji. And
you calmed yourself down.
Yeah. And I started to feel the bigness. And I started to laugh at myself at how stressed I'd been, all these things I thought I absolutely had to do today. And as I say, this isn't, you know, it's not that they will never get done, but things that are important will get done. And actually going back to what we spoke about earlier, if we put happiness and well-being as a priority, a successful outcome is more likely. So that's what I chose to do.
Because if you've been grumpy all day, you might have arrived here, you know, driving here, more chance of making mistakes.
Exactly.
Whenever I've done little crashes, and I'm very good at that, like parking and things like that, it's always when I'm stressed.
Absolutely.
You know? So you had to drive here from, was it Ascot or,
yes.
you know, and you know what I mean? All those things you've got to do to get here. You might have arrived sort of slightly panting, anxious, and that is no way to, no one should be living like that. Everyone's got to learn to take stock and calm themselves down.
Absolutely.
Which is, because you say that mindfulness is really important, and that's another thing that you teach mindfulness, don't
you? I do, yes. But just to go back, because it's a really important point, and one of the things that, it amazes me because it's not in any of the main mindfulness curriculums. Is nobody really talks about the importance of what we eat and drink and the impact that that has on the central nervous system. And I've certainly found through my experience of teaching people that if somebody comes in and they're absolutely wired on caffeine or they've had too much sugar or whatever it might be, it's really difficult to
get through to them.
Yeah, because they're just thinking from a different part of the brain. They're thinking from a different operating system. So part of becoming mindful.
So food is like substances then, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's sort of drugs in some ways.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, they're stimulants. So they're stimulating the central nervous system and they are stimulating the part of the brain whose job it is to always be on the lookout for some kind of threat. And you know as well as I do that if you want to find something threatening, it's not difficult. You just have to turn on the TV or open the newspapers, you know? It's terrifying. So we need to be mindful of really the basics of how the brain works. You don't have to go into neuroscience in any great depth, but just know that there's a part of the brain whose job it is to constantly be on the lookout for stress, and that part of the brain is stimulated through things like, and even not enough sleep, you know, when
yes,
we're tired.
We all know that.
Or many people get very grumpy when they feel cold.
I'm always cold.
Yeah. If you're cold and you don't, because that, you know, there's a physical impact of that. And so once you've and it's not, you know, it's not always easy. Sometimes we are hungry, sometimes we are cold. And there's an element of when you get really good at this, at accepting what is. However, you will be able to calm yourself down much more effectively if you are aware of how your physical conditions influence your mental capacity and your ability to think more openly and to let some of the conditioning fall away.
Amazing. So I just want to know, because obviously, you know, I've only read your book, I've been reading it for 3 or 4 days, so I haven't really got to your you've been doing this a few years. Tell us now, when you do this thing where you empty out, you forget, you try and, you know, you forget your story, you say lose your story, lose your personality, it's sort of, you say empty out, what breakthroughs, what feelings have happened to you, or not feelings, or what, you know, you say you feel connected, can you describe it?
I could describe it, however, what I don't want to do is to give people an idea, a picture of something that they're striving for, because that completely goes in the opposite of direction. Of actually, if you're, because that's engaging the brain. So really what this exercise is doing is giving yourself a break from the thinking mind and noticing what's there before and beyond the thinking mind. So if I said to you, Josephine, it's amazing, I feel blissful, I feel like I'm, then you're going to be striving for that through your mind. And in actual fact, this state, for want of a better word, that I'm talking about, you can't get there through the mind, because the mind is part of the human, and this more expansive way of being is absolutely that, it's being.
Okay, so we practice it every day, and then you say your life improves, and then you said today, you just said to me, I let the universe decide. So can we talk about that, about the universe helping us?
Yes, well, this is the beauty of learning to live this way and actually learning to have faith. And so for me personally, because...
So that's a big word, faith, then?
It's a huge word. Okay. It's the most important word.
Okay.
Because otherwise you're doing all this on your own. So everything that you feel you have to do in your life, the onus is all on you.
And it always has been, hasn't it? You know, yeah. It feels like.
Yeah. You know,
just
and that,
saying.
That can feel overwhelming, yeah. Terrifying. Mm. It can make you feel extremely lonely, even if you're surrounded by people. It can make you feel like you have huge pressure. So in actual fact, if you're able to hand some of that pressure over to, and this is what they do in the 12-step program in Alcoholics Anonymous, they say, give it to, you can't do this on your own. You can't give up drinking on your own. If you could have done, you would have done it by now, because we all want to be better. We all want to do the right thing, but sometimes it's not that easy. So actually just handing things over and saying, I don't know how to work this out. I don't know how to do this, but I have faith that life supports life. I look around me as I see the sun rising every morning, not that it actually rises, but the appearance of the sun rising every morning, as I see the seasons turning, as I see the stars being held, you're like, wow, there's this amazing power that's doing all of this. Mm-hmm. And I think I can do a better job of my life than this. And just, you know, noticing that and letting go. But we find it so hard to let go of that power because, you know, we don't have the faith in the universe, life, creation, that is actually there for us. If we can start to tap into some of that. And that's why things get easier, because suddenly we don't have to do everything ourselves. You know, we just know that things are going to work out for the best. And often because of our conditioning, what we think is going to be the best doesn't turn out to be the best for us anyway. So, you know, just letting go and trusting that everything is happening.
Can you give me an instance of before how you used to be, you know, strive, and now a different way of asking the universe? Can you tell us sort of a story?
Oh gosh, so many ways, but actually the writing of the book is probably the best example of that. I had been trying for 20 years to write a book. I always, as lots of people do, I felt like I had a book in me. I wrote my first book when I was about 17 years old. It was a pony story for teenagers. And I finished it, but it never saw the light of day. Then when I was in my 20s, because I used to love Jackie Collins and Jilly Cooper, so I wrote a bonk buster when I was in my 20s, and it was set in a PR agency in London. It was really racy, and it was brilliant, and, well, I thought it was brilliant. And so I got taken on by an agent, which was so exciting. And they suggested some ways of making it better, and I kept trying and trying and trying to make it better in the way they wanted it to be. And ultimately, I never got there. So ultimately, they said to me, it's not good enough. And that's so hard to hear, isn't it? Sorry, it's not good enough. Oh. And so for ages, I didn't write because I was so despondent. And those words.
Your self-esteem was so tied up with it.
It's not good enough. You're not good enough. And it was painful. So then I didn't write for a while. And then, you know, time moved on and different things happened.
Had children.
Yeah, had children. And then I suffered through my career. I suffered a major burnout, which meant that I had to slow down. I couldn't do anything else. I was absolutely exhausted. So I had this enforced time of rest. And actually, it was then that I used mindfulness to pull me out of that. I mean, it was a depression, really, at the time. And I started to write again. I started to express myself through writing, and various things emerged. But I didn't really have that same, you know, I'm going to write a book, I'm going to write a book. But it was sort of there. And then it was one day last year, and I was literally going out the door shopping. I had my coat on and I had my bag. And there were some words in my head, and I thought, oh, those sound quite nice. I should probably write those down. So I pulled out my iPad. On the notes page of my iPad, I started typing, which, as you know, can be quite clunky take a long time. 2 hours later, I was still there writing down these...
With your coat on.
Yeah, with my coat on. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I need to take my coat off now and I need to switch to my laptop. And 8 hours later, I was still there. And that's how the book emerged. But it was amazing because I never planned to write that book. I had no strategy. I didn't write a plan to begin with. The book just emerged, and after 20 years of trying to write a book, of attending workshops and doing this and doing everything that I should do to write a book, without even trying, I wrote a book. So that's a great example.
And you were in a good place as well. Yeah. And you'd sort of been chatting to the universe, and you'd been emptying yourself, and you were letting your being through. And so it's sort of like you let yourself flower, didn't you?
Totally, because so often we get in the way of our own selves. We get in the way of our own selves because we believe the thoughts that are in our head. We believe, imagine if I kept playing those words, you're not good enough, you're not good enough, you're not good enough.
And I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a high achiever. That's the way it motivated you, wasn't
Absolutely.
It?
And think about how limiting that is when we believe it. But then really look at it, that thought in my mind, you're not good enough, you're not good enough, and all of the other thoughts that go along with it. If I took all of those thoughts and I put them in a box, what would I have? I'd have an empty box. So it's just noticing that you have more power over your thoughts than you realise, which is why that exercise of letting go of thoughts, just let go of memories from the past, just let them go, just for a few moments even. I'm talking like 5 seconds, 3 seconds. Let go of thoughts of your future, of what you have to do later. And then let go of ideas that you have about your identity of yourself. And just breathe them out. And even if it's just a glimpse, just a second, of just noticing that without your thoughts, who are you without your thoughts? You can be and do and have anything without the limitation of your thoughts.
Wow, it's very, very powerful. So why don't we all, why aren't we sort of taught in schools? Why isn't it on billboards? Why don't we know about our being? Why is it being taken away from us?
Well, it's gradually starting to be taught in schools because it's coming to the point now where humanity really is
We're in a crisis point.
I read a devastating report last week that said 80% of university students now are depressed, feel depressed at some time, and 10% are suicidal. And we look at the statistics in terms of anxiety, depression, breakdown, the amount of people who are now on drugs in order to try and alleviate some of the pain and the suffering. So we're coming to crisis point, which is why mindfulness is now being taught in schools. It's very slow and it's taking a while to be picked up on fully, but it is happening and it is there. So hopefully we will start to see people becoming a lot more conscious, in the next few generations.
Fantastic. Now, I just want to go back to you. I want to talk about your burnout. What happened and how did it show itself?
So, as I mentioned, like many of us, I was typical of, 80s child, grew up with Margaret Thatcher running the country, and especially as women, I think, there's nothing that you can't do as a woman, and you go out there and you prove yourself. And that was a real rallying call that many of us took on. And so I did exactly that. I worked really hard.
Were you in the corporate world?
Yes.
What did you do?
I worked in public relations. I worked for big companies like Procter & Gamble and Unilever. And so it was very, very fast paced, very demanding. And actually I loved it. It wasn't that I didn't like it. I loved it, but I almost loved it too much. And I didn't know when to stop. And because I wanted that promotion and I wanted to get that amazing corner office that the boss had, and I wanted those fabulous high-heeled shoes that the girl over there had, and I wanted the Mulberry handbag, and I wanted the beautiful house, and I wanted the amazing holidays, and I wanted all of these things that I was promised would make me so, so, so happy. So I worked and worked and worked and worked so I could have all of those things. And then I had a moment where I woke up and I realised I had a lot of that stuff and I wasn't happy.
And how did it show itself?
I was not a very nice person. I was very judgmental, snappy.
Wound up. Sort of.
Yeah. Just uptight.
Driven. Yeah.
Very driven. Very, very uptight.
Mm. Did you like people?
I don't know if I disliked people, but I just always felt like I was, even when I would do things like walk the dog or ride my horse, which should have been, you know, very calming, I always felt like I should be somewhere else, or there should be something that I needed to be doing, because I was so programmed to be achieving all of the time. Mm. So it got to the point, and actually, so my marriage broke down. My marriage broke down, which was, you know, my... A lot of the blame.
How long had you been married?
About 7 years.
Yeah, crisis time. Yeah. Did he leave you or you leave him?
I asked him to leave me. Yeah. But, you know, that left me... I knew that staying with him wasn't the solution. And it was scary as hell.
Because you had two children?
I had two children. So then I was on my own with these two kids. So then I thought, right, I've got to work even harder now I'm on my own now, paying the mortgage and all the rest of it. Mm. And I had decided, I had made the decision, I wanted the marriage to end. So, you know, you've made...
Again, you're in control.
Yeah, and, you know, you've made this decision. Mm. What's the saying? You've made your bed, now lie in it, or whatever the saying is. Yeah. So, you know...
Hard on yourself.
You've got to step up. You made this decision, you've got to step up.
And you've got two children.
I've got two children. So I took on the biggest job that I could find because I needed...
Pay the mortgage.
The money,
yeah.
And within 6 months, they very kindly let me go because I... wasn't performing.
Wow.
And I literally, and because I was under so much stress, I wasn't sleeping. And you know what's amazing? I had the most awful tinnitus.
God.
But that's so amazing that my body was literally ringing an alarm bell in my ear saying, wake up, wake up. This is not the way to do it. Mm. And it got to the point that after losing that job, and I thought, I need to rest for a bit and I need to get better. And in actual fact, it probably took me 18 months of resting. And every day I thought, surely I'll feel better today. I've had 2 weeks off now. I've now had a month off. Mm. I've done nothing for 6 weeks now. Mm. But I was so, so, so exhausted. I got to the point that I literally couldn't work. And I remember there were times where I was lying on the bed and the phone would be ringing and it was maybe somebody with a job offer or something. I literally couldn't reach out and pick up the phone because I was so, so, so tired. Wasn't working. Wasn't earning, was having to take cash out on my credit card to pay the mortgage. I mean, your worst nightmare, your absolute worst nightmare. So the stress that I experienced at that time was through the roof. And it was the most incredible time because it broke me right down and I had to reach out.
What was the lowest point?
Gosh, there were so many low points. I think there was one point where I was literally on my knees in my bedroom floor crying, thinking, how can I get through this? How
despairing.
Can I cope? Yeah. And then I'd hear a little voice going, Mom, what's for tea? Gosh. And I thought, I've got to pick myself up. I've got to keep going. Whatever it takes, I've got to keep going. And so I prayed at that time, and I'd never been religious at all, but I needed help from somewhere. And this is this idea of this higher power. I couldn't do it all by myself. I needed something.
What gave you the idea to pray?
Desperation. When you're all out and you're literally on your knees.
I must say, when something's happened to my child or something, you suddenly start praying, don't you?
Yeah, when you're all out of moves. Yeah. You're all out of moves. You've got nothing left. Mm. Then... it's almost instinct, to start asking for help.
Yeah.
And then I began practicing. I'd done some meditation things in the past, but I began, because my central nervous system was so afraid and I was in fight flight the whole time, and I thought, I need something to calm myself down.
Were you having anxiety attacks?
No, not really. I'd had a few when I was younger, but no.
But you just were always wound up. Yeah.
Always wound up.
Yeah.
Always, like, just the lack of energy and the lowness.
You described it. I read adrenal burnout. Yeah.
And like many people do, reaching for white wine as a solution, as a way to feel better, which, of course, all of these things I now know make it worse. You know, or comfort.
How much were you drinking a day?
Oh, gosh. You know, it was never really bad, but, you know.
A bottle?
No, maybe 2 or 3 glasses.
Yeah.
And not every night.
Yeah.
But even that, you know, that's quite a lot of pressure on the system.
Yeah.
To be every night, you know.
Also, some people can take alcohol. I just can't take it like other people.
Yeah, I'm the same, not anymore, which is great. But that's when we start to listen to our body. We start to notice that actually even one glass of wine doesn't feel
right. Can give me a headache the next day.
Yeah.
I have to eat and drink at the same time. Anyway, we're getting off a point. So you were despairing. You started praying. You'd done meditation. So what did you start doing to help yourself?
So just more meditation. I learned more about mindfulness. It was becoming more popular at this time, so I started practicing. I started to change the way that I was thinking, so started to look for little things to be grateful for. It's all the little things that you read about that you think, gosh, that's really, you know, really, it always makes me laugh when you read an interview with a great actress and they say, what's your beauty secret? And she says, I drink water. And you think, oh, how boring. I thought it was going to be something fabulous and, you know, out there. But it's the little things. It's being outside in nature. It's being grateful for things. It's noticing.
Did you go on the happy pills or not?
No. I didn't. I was able to
get it through without
to pull myself.
But you do think you were depressed looking back.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you started mindfulness, gratefulness. I did this thing where every night I'd write down 3 things I was grateful for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like building up, or writing down emotions was a really good one as well. You know, so you knew all the time how you're feeling, because it's like, if you start writing it, then it's like, you know that it, you know what I mean? It's like a reality more than just carrying it around with you all the time.
And these are really great exercises. I say really simple, but they really, really do work.
And then I had a dog. So again, I'd go around Ravenscourt Park just up the road and I'd stop and look at leaves.
Yes.
I'll never forget though, the first time I ever read Eckhart Tolle was probably about 13 or 14 years ago, and I was living in Dorset and I was doing a dog walk, and I suddenly thought, now, and I literally realised that I'd been nearly running.
Yes.
And I suddenly started slowing down.
Yeah.
And I suddenly started breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed the beech leaves, and I remember noticing the colours.
Yes.
And I'd never noticed them before. You know, it was like I'd never ever seen this before.
Yeah.
And even now, if I say the word now, I can calm myself down just by saying that word, you know.
That's a wonderful, wonderful anchor. Because when we're in the present moment, it's very difficult to feel the anxiety of the past or the worry of the future, the regret of the past, rather, or the worry of the future. You know, most of the time, how am I feeling now? What's the truth of now? And you know, most of the time we're okay.
And I find that now it feels quite nicely empty, if you know what I mean. I mean, my idea of a good day is one where it's not full of highs and lows. It's a peaceful, you
absolutely.
Know. Am I getting into the right thing?
Totally, you're absolutely okay. Right.
Because I suddenly, I worry, like people go, oh, I felt ecstatic. And I think, oh, I don't feel that. I just feel like just calm.
Yeah, which is wonderful. Because the human condition means that we don't like experiences that feel bad, so we try and push them away, and we try and hang on to or get more of experiences that feel good. So it's wonderful to have a moment of elation, but in the same way, you know, you can just experience that happiness for what it is and be willing to just let that go as well, in the same way as you are willing to let the sadness pass through. I mean, you said that your mantra is, you know, this too will pass, or, you know, the idea that everything is like clouds and moving on.
Yeah.
And actually to have that equanimity, that space where you can, no matter what's occurring, that you know who you are, that you have your sanity in the midst of it all, is a really wonderful and powerful place to be.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. I urge you to go and buy this book. It really is. I'm going to keep it by my bedside for a long, long time. And it's called The Lost Art of Being, Secrets to a Calm, Happy and Easy Life, by Jackie McDonald, and it's published by Matador. But even more inspiring women, I know you can't believe there are more, but there are, and they're on RadioGorgeous.com. Thank you so much, Jackie.
Thank you for having me. It's been such a pleasure, Josephine.